Locked was the workshop of an eccentric whose genius spanned war and art. Blueprints for stepped thread breeches and visionary sketches of shells with smashing effects as yet unheard of shared the workspace with a painter's easel, a library of novels, a bass violin, and a grand piano. Yamamoto left the cordite, the iodine, and the ammonia on the piano and spent an hour studying the drafting tables. "Be Japan's eyes," he preached at the Black Ocean Society's spy school on the rare occasions that duty allowed him home. "Take every opportunity to observe, whether your ultimate mission is deception, sabotage, or murder." What he saw frightened him. The 12-inch guns on the factory floor could throw shells 7 miles to pierce 10 inches of the newest face-hardened side armor. But up here in the drawing loft where new ideas were hatched, the Americans had preliminary sketches for 15-inch guns and even a 16-inch, 70-foot-long monster that would hurl a ton of high explosives beyond the curve of the Earth. No one knew yet how to aim such a weapon when the distances were too great to gauge range by spotting the splashes of near misses. But the bold imagination that Yamamoto saw at work warned him it was only a matter of time before America's new Navy invented novel concepts for fire control. Yamamoto stuffed a wad of paper money in the gun designer's desk. 50 $20 U.S. gold certificates. Considerably more than one of the arsenal's skilled workmen earned in a year. Already the U.S. Navy was third only to England's and Germany's. Its North Atlantic fleet, brazenly rechristened the Great White Fleet, was showing the flag in a swaggering voyage around the world. But Britain, Germany, Russia, and France were not America's enemies. The true mission of the Great White Fleet was to threaten the Empire of Japan with naked steel. America aimed to command the Pacific Ocean from San Francisco to Tokyo. Japan would not allow it, Yamamoto thought with a prideful smile. It was only 3 years since the Russo-Japanese War spawned in blood a new master of the Western Pacific. Mighty Russia had tried to strong-arm Japan. Today the Empire of Japan occupied Port Arthur, and Russia's Baltic fleet lay under 300 feet of water at the bottom of the Tsushima Strait, thanks in no small part to Japanese spies who had infiltrated the Russian Navy. As Yamamoto closed the drawer on the money, he had the eerie sensation of being watched. He looked across the desk into the bold gaze of a beautiful woman whose photographic portrait stood in a silver frame. He recognized Langner's dark-haired daughter and admired how faithfully the photographer had captured her compelling eyes. She had inscribed it in a flowing hand, "For Father, the Gunner Who Dreads Not." Yamamoto turned his attention to Langner's bookshelves. Bound volumes of patent applications vied with novels for the space. The applications filed recently had been written on a typewriter. Yamamoto pulled volume after volume, working his way back to the last year that applications were submitted in longhand. He spread one on the designer's desk, then chose a sheet of paper from a side drawer and a Waterman fountain pen with a gold nib. Referring repeatedly to the sample of handwriting, he forged a brief, incoherent letter. Ending it with the words, "Forgive me," he scrawled Arthur Langner's signature. He took the iodine and the ammonia into the gun designer's washroom. With the butt of his Nambu pocket pistol, he crushed the iodine crystals on the marble washstand and brushed the resultant powder into a shaving mug. He wiped the gun clean with the washroom towel, leaving a purplish smear on the cloth. Then he poured ammonia onto the iodine powder, stirring with Langner's toothbrush until he had a thick paste of nitrogen iodide. He propped open the lid of the grand piano, reached into the narrow end farthest from the keyboard, and smeared the paste on the closely bunched strings. After it dried, the explosive concoction would become unstable and extremely sensitive to impact. A gentle vibration would set off a loud bang and a flash. Alone, the explosion would damage little beyond the piano, but as a detonator, it would be deadly. He placed the